Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Eric and I have been examining a portion of the fourth volume of a history book called Saints, Sounded in Every Ear. It is the fourth of four volumes dealing with LDS history, and this one covers the years 1955 to the year 2020. The reason why we feel it's important to delve into this historical event known as the First Vision, where Joseph Smith claims that he is visited by both God the Father and Jesus Christ, who tells him that all the churches are wrong, their creeds are an abomination, and their professors are corrupt, is because Joseph Smith attaches this whole experience to a revival that he claims took place in the second year after his family moves to Manchester, New York. And it was in the place where we lived, there was an unusual excitement on the subject of religion. Now, Joseph Smith places this first vision as happening in the spring of 1820. However, it seems from the evidence that was produced by a man by the name of Wes Walters that Joseph Smith seems to get it all wrong. The revival he describes did not take place in 1820 at all, but rather it took place around the end of 1824 into 1825. This causes a lot of problems for scholars at the LDS Church who read Wes Walters' paper that he produced in 1967, causing a group of scholars to go back into the area where all this supposedly takes place to try and prove Wes Walters wrong. A number of these research papers were published in the spring 1969 edition of BYU Studies, and that's what we're going to be looking at again today, because in this BYU Studies, they are trying to make a case. Well, they're actually trying to make a number of cases. However, their defense, I think, is very weak, because while Joseph Smith says that there were Baptist, Methodists, and Presbyterians involved in this revival, they spill a lot of ink trying to prove there were a lot of Methodist camp meetings in the area, showing that in 1820 there was some religious excitement. But it's not the excitement that Joseph Smith is describing, and that is the problem here.
And especially as yesterday, Bill, we talked about the losses that the three churches actually had, the Presbyterians, the Baptists, and the Methodists. So if there's a revival adding all these people, how come they're not being put on church rolls?
Well, let me turn our attention today to the spring 1969 edition of BYU Studies. On page 312 and 13, there are two maps, and there's these circles on this map showing distances from Palmyra, and they're in 5-mile increments. The argument that these scholars are trying to make is that Joseph Smith could have easily participated in some of these religious excitements, even though it appears that they're just Methodists in many cases, because he was a young, spry guy who could go a long distance to attend church, it appears. However, Wes Walters, in a rebuttal found in a book that he wrote with Michael Marquardt called Inventing Mormonism, he rebuts these maps and shows that they're actually fudging the distance in some cases, and it was really further away than what the map implies.
Let's take a look at page 28 of Inventing Mormonism, and it says, despite such evidence supporting the 1824-25 date, two main lines of arguments have been advanced to confirm Smith's 1820 revival date. The first maintains that Smith was merely alluding to revivals which were common in Western New York State at this period. Proponents of this theory point out that he was in Missouri when he wrote his 1838-39 account, which is the official church account. Thus, when he spoke of revival, quote-unquote, in the place where we lived, He was designating the whole of Western New York. In support of this, apologists point to a number of revivals or substantial membership increases occurring during 1820 in towns close enough for Smith to reach on foot. They point to David Marks, who as a teenager attended revivals up to 30 miles from his home. Since Smith was a robust lad, he could have done the same. In 1969, Brigham Young University Studies, which we're talking about right now, published a map showing 9 revival sites which Smith could have visited in 1820 with distances from the Smith homestead shown in 5-mile increments. However, the map is flawed, with 4 villages placed significantly closer than they appear on accurate maps of the area and other sites listed where there was no religious excitement at all.
And I think there's a lot of truth to what's being said here, because if you were merely to go to Google Maps, you're going to see that they are a bit farther away than what these circles tend to imply. But Marquardt and Walters go on page 28 to say, however, this argument overlooks and negates Cowdery's and Smith's own assertion of a revival in Palmyra and vicinity. Now, we should mention, this is speaking of Oliver Cowdery, who was the third cousin of Joseph Smith on his mother's side. Oliver Cowdery played a very large role in the translation process of the Book of Mormon. So that's who it's referring to. And it goes on to say that Smith, in an 1843 interview with a reporter from the New York Spectator, stated that it was, quote, among the different religious denominations in the neighborhood where I lived, end quote. The authors go on to say, Lucy says that she and her children, this would be Lucy Mack Smith, the mother of Joseph Smith, Lucy says that she and her children, in company with their whole neighborhood, quote, flocked to the meeting house, end quote. This description, the authors say, does not suggest a 10 to 15 mile walk.
Hey, everybody, let's get together. Let's go for 15 miles to see this revival. The whole neighborhood's going to go. The mom is going to go. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
But Eric, it could be argued that maybe they didn't walk. Maybe they took a wagon. That's quite possible. But it seems like if this revival's going on, you're probably going to be attending on a pretty regular basis, we could assume, not just maybe once a week or twice a month or something like that. Does that really seem plausible that they would go that far? Remember, we cannot discount the fact of what Joseph Smith said. In the place where we lived, an unusual excitement on the subject of religion. Going out 10, 15 miles doesn't seem to fit that description that Joseph Smith is giving. Now, I got to give credit to these scholars. They've got a difficult thing to try and prove, because they realize the things that Smith puts in his story, there's really no evidence to support it.
They're time markers, and you can't get around the spring of 1820 when this supposedly takes place. And we've talked about some of the other difficulties. And so, yeah, you're right. Their job is made very difficult. This is what Walters and Marquardt continue to say on page 28 of their book, Inventing Mormonism. The definitive indication that the revival was local comes in Smith's remarks about, quote, great confusion and bad feelings, end quote, ensuing at the end of the meetings. Even the most ardent defenders of an 1820 date recognized that this strife over converts was local, resulting in Smith's family being proselytized to the local Presbyterian church. Then he goes on and says the second line of argument seeks to establish one specific revival characterized by several of the features his account describes, close enough to his home he could have attended. According to this argument, an awakening took place at the village of Vienna, some 11 miles from Palmyra, between the summer of 1819 and the summer of 1820. The features seen as echoing Smith's account include the presence of George Lane at Vienna, a camp meeting in the area, and a substantial membership increase. However, There is no evidence that such a revival occurred. It's an argument from silence, Bill. And then Walters writes, Lane was at Vienna in July 1819, attending the annual meeting of the Methodist Genesee Conference, at which he was appointed to serve in Pennsylvania. There is no record that he preached or that a camp meeting was held in connection with this conference. In 1826, when a camp meeting was actually held, the conference minutes contain reference to the ministers who were put in charge of the arrangements for the meeting. No indication of any such arrangement appears in the 1819 minutes.
You know what's interesting about the scholars, the BYU scholars, bringing up George Lane? They want to throw George Lane in this because they can't get around the fact that William Smith, Joseph Smith's brother, names George Lane, the Methodist pastor, as being a prominent figure in this revival. There was also the Presbyterian pastor, Benjamin Stockton. But Lane, I think, becomes a problem area for these scholars because, yes, he shows up in the area, but sporadically and usually for short periods of time, not long enough to be involved in a revival that we seem to understand. If it's the one that took place at the end of 1824 into 1825, goes for a period of several months. And it doesn't seem to fit what Joseph Smith is describing to us. And by the fact that William Smith and others place George Lane on the scene, this becomes problematic. And I'm just looking at page 330 of the spring 1969 edition of BYU Studies. It says the conference was in session over a period of 8 days, July 1st to July 8th. And it talks about Lane being here, the presence of some 110 ministers and their bishop, Bishop R.R. Roberts, at the Genesee Conference meetings representing New York, Pennsylvania, and Upper and Lower Canada districts must have created at least a moderate stir in the immediate neighborhood. This places George Lane within a 15-mile vicinity of Manchester, attending the largest Methodist meeting of the year in Western New York among a great number of Methodist ministers at a time when Joseph Smith was aware of, quote, an unusual excitement on the subject of religion. Sometime in the second year, and then in brackets it says 1819 after our removal to Manchester.
Would you call this a stretch?
I would say definitely, and it doesn't seem to even fit the correct historical timeline because tax records show that the Smiths were in Manchester. Well, at least they moved there in about 1822. So if it happens 2 years after that, as Joseph Smith claims, we're talking 1824. So why throw in George Lane here, who happens to be 15 miles away in the vicinity of Manchester, when this can't possibly be what Joseph Smith is talking about? I think they do their readership a disservice, and I think they do members of the church a disservice because this is not really good evidence to support what Joseph Smith said about this event regarding the first vision.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism from a biblical perspective.